Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Deadhead Cannabis Show. I'm Larry Mishkin, and I have my co-host Rob Hunt with me today from California. Our producer is always Dan Humiston. And folks, we've been talking about this one for a while, and we've got half of the crew here that we want to talk to today. But for purposes of today's show, he's the big half of the crew, so we're very excited. And the gentleman of whom I'm speaking is Mark Schlossberg. And if you don't recognize that name, you will shortly after we have a chance to start speaking with him. He occupies one of these wonderful little niches in Grateful Dead history that either you know about or you don't know about. So if you don't know about it after today's show, you will. So please stick around and listen to that. We have a show lined up for you today, if time permits, from December 20th, 1969, at the Fillmore Auditorium. And in fact, Dan, can you just give us the quick intro song from that show that we have lined up?
The Mason died on Monday. We buried him in the wall. All his children grew and grew. They never grew so tall before. They may never grow so tall again.
Thank you very much. Yeah, Mason's Children is always one of my favorites. It's, I believe that was only the second time they had ever played it, I read in the notes. And, you know, they really come out strong. 1969, they're firing on all cylinders. Well, while normally we would start this part of the show with news of what's going on in the cannabis world, again, due to the special guest we have today, we're going to push that off to the side, and we're going to dive right in. So, first of all, Rob, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm great, Larry. And it's always nice to hear Mason's Children. And I got to tell you, one of the things about, you know, kind of the later iterations of post-Garcia Grateful Dead bands is that Phil Lesh really made an effort to bring that song back into the lineup. And I think that was, of all the choices that he made of, you know, bringing something back that a lot of fans wanted to hear, the reintroduction of Mason's Children into the lineup is such a great choice and such an enthusiastic, fun song to play and to listen to.
I couldn't agree with you more. And when I saw him do his three shows with the quintet out at the Capitol Theater in Port Chester the first night, first song came right out into Mason's Children and just, you know, blew everybody away. So it's a great tune. It's fun to hear him play it. Absolutely, I agree with that.
Yeah, I think that and Viola Lee Blues are the two that I was like, yeah, thank you for bringing those two back.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Well, we've been talking a little bit about the Grateful Dead previously in 1971, 72, and 73 in relation to the recent box set released by the Grateful Dead, Listen to the River, that covers their shows in St. Louis over those 3 years. St. Louis has always kind of been a special place for the Grateful Dead, and throughout those shows, they have, you know, quite a bunch of comments and interesting tidbits that really make them a lot of fun. And we will be getting to those shows, but not this week. The reason why I mention those shows is because they form the underlying circumstances for where Mark Schlossberg comes into the Grateful Dead history. So in December of 1971, the 9th and 10th, I believe, they had gone ahead and they had played the Grateful Dead two shows at the Fox Theater. I think it was the second year they had appeared at the Fox Theater. But these are the first two discs from the box set. The second one on December 10th was broadcast live in St. Louis. They're really great shows, and again, we will get to them in the next couple of weeks. But due to a quirk in scheduling for the Dead, after their December 10th show, which was a Friday, they did not have another show scheduled until December 14th at Hill Auditorium in Ann Arbor. And just as an aside, and not because I went to Ann Arbor, but if you haven't ever heard that show, the two nights in Ann Arbor from Hill Auditorium are equally wonderful, and we'll get around to those one day too. So faced with 4 days in between and nothing to do, the Grateful Dead, for reasons that I'm sure only they can explain, decided to hang out in St. Louis, not just all day Saturday the 11th, but a good chunk of Sunday the 12th, which becomes important because there is an airport hotel in St. Louis called the Airport Hilton, and this was the hotel where the Grateful Dead would stay when they came to St. Louis in the early 70s when they were performing at the Fox Theater. So they had performed December 9th and December 10th, all day Saturday. Now on Sunday, a fellow by the name of Richie Gerber, who had gone to West Ladue Junior High School, which is the same junior high school I went to many years ago, but a few years after Richie, was celebrating his bar mitzvah with a kids' party that night in one of the ballrooms at the Airport Hilton. Well, before we get to that, let's just say the Bar Mitzvah was very blessed because they had a wonderful band from the high school, students from the high school performing for them, and that name of that band is Spring Rain. So if you haven't heard it, go Google it. It's got to be out there somewhere, I'm sure. But Spring Rain, and they were the high school band playing there that night. Mark Schlossberg was the bass player for Spring Rain, and so he's going to have a lot to tell us. But where the story gets interesting is somewhere during the night, the Grateful Dead were still in St. Louis. They were still staying at the hotel, and they meandered, as it were, into this ballroom, and the rest will be history that we'll hear about right now. So first of all, Mark, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us today. We really, really appreciate it.
I'm happy to be here.
Wonderful. Now, I heard that we're not the first ones to have an opportunity to talk to you about this. You were actually on the good old Grateful Dead podcast as well, correct?
Yeah, starting in about July or August, I started getting calls and people were texting me and, hey, we're getting ready for this. I'm writing a blog. We're doing a podcast. And we heard about this story and we weren't sure that if it's real. And I assured them that it was quite real and that I've been telling the story for about 40 years.
So your Spring Rain is up on the stage. Give us an idea of what kind of a band Spring Rain was. What was your standard bar mitzvah set list?
So we were we had moved past the acid rock days, and we were into folk rock at that point. And we were doing James Taylor and Carole King and Elton John, and that's probably that. There were a few other tunes. That was sort of half the list, and then the other half of the list is we had a good one of the members of the band who was also sort of our sound engineer. His name was Steve Fisher, and Steve had a shtick that got the kids up and dancing. He'd come out all greased up, like Greased Lightning, sort of like, what was it, Sha-na-na back in the days. And so Steve would do Blue Suede Shoes and Johnny B. Goode and all of those things. And, you know, we were not bad. We were all in 10th grade at that time, mostly 15. Steve was the only 16-year-old, and so he was the one that had to drive all the equipment around. But we were probably the bar mitzvah band at that particular time. And so we worked a couple times a month at least for all of that period of time. You know, had a great time doing it. So that was our shtick.
Okay, so Spring Rain is playing. And pick up the story wherever it begins, involving the Grateful Dead.
Yeah. So it for me, we've been telling these stories. Other people have sort of given other parts. So Richie, for example, Steve and I connected up with Richie a couple of years ago, trying to find out about pictures and things like that. And through that, we learned that Richie's older sister, who was actually in our grade, happened to be at the bar mitzvah, and apparently she was. She was instrumental in luring the band into the room. Now, the way I always told it is that they were in the bar getting drunk or having a drink, whatever what it was, and they heard scratchy rock and roll, you know, to quote Joni Mitchell, and you know they got interested and they came down. And my younger sister happened to be at the bar mitzvah, Joe, and she comes over to me and she says, "Mark, the Grateful Dead are here." And just like any other arrogant older brother, I said, "Joanne, go away. I'm trying to play." And she says, "No, they really are here." And she pointed to the door. And sure enough, there they were, sort of like Marx Brothers or Larry Moe and Curly, standing there in the door. And somehow or other, we had the presence of mind to ask them if they wanted to play or if they would be willing to play. And they said yes. And that was it.
So who came up? Who did you get? Who came on stage with you?
So it was the first tour with Godshaw, first of all. So this, you know, and I think Pigpen wasn't there. Kreutzmann was there, Lesh, Weir. And the fun part about it was Marmaduke was there from the New Riders. This was
Dawson.
As I told the story, I'm not sure this is exactly right, but I've been telling the story that this was essentially the last tour that the Dead did with the New Riders. That part of the story came in much later when I met my future wife, because although I was not a huge New Riders fan, when she found out that she was a New Riders fan, so that was a good part of the story for her.
That's crazy. So you got to play with John Marmaduke Dawson as well as playing with the Grateful Dead, huh?
That's it. That's it. And mostly they played New Riders tunes. That's what they that was what they did. They did not really do Dead tunes. They did New Riders tunes, and he kind of led and sang.
That's even cooler, man. That's like, don't bury the lead. Like, I got to play with the Grateful Dead, and we played New Riders songs. That's incredible.
It was really nice, and it was funny because, you know, while we all knew the Dead, and I probably had American Beauty and Working Man's Dead, I wasn't a huge Dead fan at the time, and I definitely didn't know who the New Riders were. But after that, we picked up a whole bunch of truckin' songs. You know, all the trucker song, the trucker rock that came after that. That was what we added to the repertoire after the gig.
Oh, my God. So now, did you have a chance to actually play with them?
Yeah, so what happened, they played four or five songs, and then we had to sort of finish our gig. And that's when, and I don't remember all this, but Steve was talking about this. Then Steve came out for his set, all slicked up and ready to rock. And apparently the Dead guys were in the back cracking up because it was a very funny set. You know, we did it. And of course, all these 13-year-old kids are out there dancing and all. And then after that, so one of the more unique parts about our band was that we were all new musicians. We were not great musicians at that particular point. I mean, I've gone on and played seriously for a while, but we had a piano player at the time, John McSweeney, who is blind. I always say he was blind, but he probably still is. And he was actually the rock of the band. He was probably our best player at the time. And I always say they were the reason that the Dead hung around as long as they did is I think they were intrigued. They maybe were just high enough to think that maybe they were looking at the next Ray Charles or Stevie Wonder or something. John was really good. And that kind of kept their interest. And somewhere along the lines, we started a 12-bar blues kind of thing. And they came up. And I gave my bass to Phil, and Doug turned over his drums to Kreutzmann, and you know, some Bruce gave his guitar to Weir, and the rest is history. And we jammed a little bit on, you know, 12-bar blues. We were not great improvisers at the time, and but it was, you know, it was the one thing we all knew, and it was easy to do.
So the kid whose bar mitzvah it was, did he understand the magnitude of the moment of kind of like what was happening? Or is he just like, who are these old guys and why are they playing my bar mitzvah? I guess they weren't even old then. They're pretty young guys then.
So it's funny that you would ask that question, because through our conversations with Richie and all, you know, Richie was a typical 13-year-old Jewish kid, you know. He wasn't as interested in the Grateful Dead as he was in sports. And the night before, at his adult party, which was held at the hockey arena, apparently Gary Unger stopped by, and he was all excited about that. That was the thing. He had no idea who the Dead were. Now, he later came to find out, because all the kids went out to the lobby, because there were no cell phones in those days, and called their older brothers and sisters. And we all lived about 15 minutes away from the Airport Hilton, and within 20 minutes or so, the lobby was filled with all the high schoolers, and we had
and so all of a sudden the room filled up, and there they are. They've got a whole audience ready for
poor kid having the bar mitzvah. It's like, everyone beat it, man. I'm just trying to get bar mitzvah and have a family party.
That's right.
So here's the question. Did the band dance the horror?
You know, we weren't a big horror playing band. So it's not like we played the music we wanted to. We were not sort of a traditional bar mitzvah band at that point, which was probably why we worked
right.
so much.
Although I have to say, can you just imagine Bobby calling out a hot horror? That would be great.
That'd be hilarious.
That would
yeah.
be great.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Did they take, you know, were the people who were there, did they mingle with folks? Could you talk to them?
Yeah, we talked to them. We, you know, they actually hung around a long time afterwards. We sat in the bar.
Oh, they let you in the bar? Nice.
I was about to say, was it an open bar? Were they getting free booze ahead of the deal?
No. We actually sat in a hotel bar afterwards. And John was there, you know, but his mother always had to come and pick him up because he didn't drive and all. So, you know, it was kind of a family scene. I later found out that it might not have been quite as as family as I thought, because my sister then sort of came forward many, many, many years later with how the autographs were being signed. And they weren't all on publicity photos, although I have copies of the publicity photos from one of the young ladies whose father was a rabbi. So I have copies of those with the signatures of everybody. But my sister comes to tell me that there were a few people whose names shall remain anonymous who had the signatures done on their chest.
Including your sister, as I recall.
The story is she does cop to that.
Look, it's harder to sell that way. You can't bring that down to the pawn shop 20 years later and go, hey, I've got this memento from the bar mitzvah in 71.
Wow. And Richie's mom lost the photos.
That was in a fire. That's what happened about a couple of years ago. Steve and I have been sort of the keepers of the story for all these years. And we both got sort of curious. We figured, oh, there's got to be pictures because it was a bar mitzvah. I mean, you know. And we called and got in touch with Richie, who is now an insurance lawyer, which is, you know, amusing in and of itself. Uh-huh. But apparently his family had a fire and nearly all the photos were lost. He sent me one or two that he found where you can't see anybody from the dead. You can see a couple of the band members. I think I'm in it from the back, but you can't tell it's me. So it's unfortunate, but there are no pictures. All I have is the article from the Ladue High School paper from the next couple of days after that it incorrectly states that Phil Lesh is a drummer, but otherwise it was a very accurate article.
So what did that do for your status at high school? I mean, all of a sudden when you came back in on Monday morning, were you like mobbed by...
I never had to do anything else in high school.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Like, you probably never had to buy another beer.
My later bands were much better. And we continued down the circuit and played all kinds of stuff.
So when you're auditioning for new bands, are you like, yeah, you know, going through kind of my chops, I played in this band, played in that band, the Grateful Dead played with me at a bar mitzvah, you know, kind of standard repertoire. You know?
Yeah, we always pretty much put on our own music. So I never really had to use that. It's been much more amusing to use it in a corporate setting. When people say, you know, when you have those warm-up events with new people and you go around the horn and say, tell us something about you that nobody else knows, and I'll tell the story. And as I was telling Larry the other day, you know, the problem is it's aging out because the last few times I've told it in a corporate setting, several people have come up to me and said, so now, who's the Grateful Dead?
I find that so hard to believe these days, though, because there's such a resurgence in popularity. I mean, like, John Mayer's brought, like, this whole new wave of, like, teeny bopper Grateful Dead fans now that...
Well, that's what... So I'm talking about the strapped-down consulting class.
Yeah, sure.
You know, young consultants that have sort of lost track. But
in more ways than one, man.
Exactly. But what I will say is, frequently, as I will say, well... That's who John Mayer is playing with now, and they'll say, oh, okay, yeah. Now I understand.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's so funny. I find myself, like, remember, like, you know, in my 30s, and I'd talk about a TV show that I thought was, like, a young kid's TV show, and I'd realize I was speaking to kids in their teens, and they'd have no idea what I was talking about, because there was even a generation in between us, where I'm like, wow, I'm already two generations above these kids, not one.
I tell a story about a record changer at my daughter's college graduation, and she is a musician. She's a flute player, and she graduated from Berklee College, or not Berklee, Boston Conservatory. It's now Berklee. But we were at a party with all these kids, and they were wrestling with a record changer, and I went and put on four records on the changer, and I hit the button, and they were all amazed. It was like a new world for them. Oh, that's how that works. We've never seen that.
So I've got to ask, are you a Grateful Dead fan now? I mean, obviously you've played a ton of other music yourself, and it sounds like your genre that you like to play is kind of, you know, not Grateful Dead or jam bandish. But have you maintained, like, some sort of familiarity with the music as a result of the experience?
Oh, absolutely. You know, so it's become lore just because of where I married into. You know, so my not so much my wife, although she's into it. She was more of a New Riders fan, but her cousins are huge Grateful Dead fans. In fact, you were mentioning that show at the Capitol Theater. My wife's cousin Sharon, my cousin now, she was at that show, and she, you know, she's our age and goes to them every show imaginable. So there, and then my son-in-law, who's in his 40s, he was one of the guys that sort of traveled with them for a while and sold merch in the parking lots. And then and we have gone and seen Dead & Company with my grandson at the Gorge. So, you know, I still keep a connection. I'm not sure I will do it again, but, you know, I still enjoy it. And I put on the old albums every once in a while and enjoy it when they come up on the playlist. So,
well, tell your sister that my claim to fame is that I snuck into David Nelson's dressing room at the Gathering of the Vibes in 2006 and drank all his beer. So she's a new Riders fan. She'll appreciate it. Never leave a dressing room, you know, unguarded.
So, Mark, what I really want, if you have a second and can tell us what you shared with me the other day, fast forward a year, the Dead come back to play at the Fox Theater, and you got a story about that.
I do. So it was very amusing. We were, you know, now we were 16-year-olds instead of 15-year-olds. And, you know, and by that time we'd known how unique that experience was the prior year. And, you know, and they did hang around and we talked and all that. So we thought, well, what the hell? We'll go down to the Fox Theater. We'll hang around the door and we'll see if they remember us and let us in. But by that time, I think their world had moved on. Things were very, very different. And the bouncers were having none of our story. They weren't interested in the story. And so I said, you know, I'll probably have to wait 50 years. And here we are.
Right, just about 50 years later. See, now, if you had shown up with the pictures, then maybe they would have let you in.
That's right. You know, that's right.
Then you might have had a shot there. So I know Rob was asking about the about how you follow the Dead or if you play their music at all. Did you ever have a chance? Did you ever go to the Fox Theater in any of those years to see them?
I think I went to the concert that we tried to crash.
So you just wound up seeing that one.
I saw that one, and I'm sure I've seen a couple of others. I mean, the Fox Theater was such an amazing theater. We saw all kinds of performances there. And I'm pretty certain that I saw the Dead in one of those.
I always loved the Fox Theater, and I may have mentioned to you, you know, by the time I started seeing the Dead in 82, the Fox Theater was, you know, in a part of St. Louis that nobody went to. And nobody was going in the Fox Theater at that time. But we all had heard the stories, and we all pined for the day they'd even just come to St. Louis, let alone the Fox Theater. And lo and behold, 1986 in the summer, they announced they're going to play two shows at the Fox. We got our tickets. We were all ready to go. Jerry went into the diabetic coma a few weeks before, and that was the end of that. And they never sniffed the Fox Theater again. Although, a few years later in 2010, Phish decided to play a show in the Fox Theater. So a cousin of mine was able to get me tickets for that. So I went down and I went with him to the show. And around my neck in a laminate, I had my Grateful Dead ticket from 1985. So just in case anybody didn't believe me, I'd be able to flash it at him. And seeing Phish in the Fox Theater was wonderful. I mean, it is definitely a great place to see live music. Just sorry that I never had the chance to see that. I guess that's just the burden of being born a little bit later. But would you, I know you said you had American Beauty and Working Man's. Did you ever listen to Live Dead, you know, and some of the really like primal acid rock stuff?
Well, the one that came out afterwards, right after that, was the, and I can't remember the name, but it was the, I think it was the Egyptian Tours, the one that they did when they were traveling through Egypt. And I have that album at home, and that was probably the, you know, sort of the liveliest album that I ever listened to. And I sort of drifted away and moved into jazz and other kinds of music by that time. And so, but, you know, I've always come back to the old stuff. So,
do you ever have a chance to listen to any of Jerry Garcia's solo stuff? He does a lot of jazz with David Grisman and Howard Wales. And
so, yeah, and it's funny how I came upon that. It's really interesting now because my son, who's, you know, in his 30s, he discovered the pizza tapes, and he had that. And so, you know, and I stole all of his music after, you know, I tried to steal all of my children's music so that I wouldn't become old. And so he had the pizza tapes, and then, you know, I started discovering the Tony Rice stuff, which for me, I am a humongous Bela Fleck fan. In fact, we saw Bela first concert in 2.5 years, just about four nights ago.
Right. I heard that he's back out touring again.
Oh, it was a fantastic concert. Unbelievable. But, you know, what happened was I started to put all these threads together, and he started with Tony Rice, and then there are these great interviews. I'm also a big Mark O'Connor fan, and there's this great interview where Mark O'Connor and Tony Rice are sitting around with Jerry Garcia talking about how he should hear this young musician called Bela Fleck. These guys, and Jerry Douglas, these guys are amazing. And then also, of course, I've been a longtime fan of David Grisman, so that's all of those things. We've seen, you know, him in local jazz venues and here in Seattle. So,
love David Grisman, too. What was interesting about that Phil Lesh show from the Capitol Theater that I was mentioning, and you said your sister was at, like the third or fourth song of the night was So What?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Miles Davis. And it just, and I, it's funny what your perspective is. We've talked about before on our show, all of the other bands I discovered because the Grateful Dead were covering them. So I'd go out and say, well, if the Dead are covering Dylan or whoever, I got to go listen to all of their music. And, you know, all of a sudden I'm being turned on to everybody. And I knew that, So What, it was on a Grisman Garcia album, was not a Garcia tune, but they started playing it. And everybody's like, what is this? I'm like, So What? And they're like, So What? I mean, it's a Garcia tune. And someone's like, no, it's not, idiot. It's a Miles. I'm like, okay, I know it's Miles Davis, but I'm oriented to it through Garcia.
Right. Well, it's interesting. So What isn't in my current repertoire. I play with my neighbor who is the next generation. He's in his 30s or 40s. And he is a great jazz piano player, and he and I get together and jam, and So What is one of our tunes. So that it's funny.
Oh, yeah, no, that's just one, you know. But again, it just all the different stuff it's pulled me into, it's just amazing. Do you keep up with the other members of Spring Rain besides Steve?
You know, Sherry, our singer, she and I, you know, she's been out to Seattle and had dinner. We had dinner with her. I haven't seen her in a few years. It was funny. Doug Heller, the drummer, called me during all of the run-up. People were starting, you know, as you said earlier, you were trying to find me. You know, various people had called me, and, you know, another friend of a friend called me and said, oh, I know one of the guys that was in the band. So Doug and I talked. It's the first time he and I had talked for a long time. And that's about it, really. Our guitar player is off at somewhere in Massachusetts, and what I've heard is that he is a songbird expert. He has become quite the expert in bird songs. So, you know, we know where people are, but we're not all close anymore.
Okay, so there's no hope of a 50th reunion for Spring Rain.
Highly unlikely. It's much more likely that my subsequent bands would play again than that.
I don't know. Maybe if we told Bob Weir about it, he'd want to reconnect.
I have always wondered, you know, will I see them in an airport somewhere or something like that, and could go up and say, do you remember? But I've never gotten to do that, so.
Well, you know, I always wondered if even they remember, right? It was until it all started coming out again. And like I think I told you, you know, although you're from St. Louis, Keith is from St. Louis, I'm from St. Louis, there's a little bit of an age difference here, not much, but enough. And I never knew Keith in St. Louis. I met him up here. And I was introduced to him. Somebody introduced us because they know we both like the Grateful Dead, without realizing the St. Louis connection, which, you know, we just launched into all of this. But as deadheads will do, when you're first meeting another deadhead and you really want to, you know, throw it around, I was at this show. Well, I was at Richie Gerber's bar mitzvah. And I was like, what are you talking about, Richie? Who the hell? Oh, Wes Ledoux. I know Wes Ledoux. I know the Airport Hilton. I know all of this. Now bring this around full. And he tells me this story, and it had to be over 30 years ago. And I, you know, I like Keith. I didn't have any reason to believe he wasn't telling me the truth, but I'm just wondering, you know, was it really like, you know, somebody who looked like the Grateful Dead? It seemed a little strange. And over the years, I would tell the story. Oh, I've got this buddy who saw the Grateful Dead at a bar mitzvah show, and everybody would just kind of shrug their shoulders. But 6 months ago, the article I think that you were talking about popped up on the internet, and people started sending it around. And then, of course, when the box set came out, and David Lemieux talked about it on his podcast, and all of a sudden, you know, it wasn't even just that. Wow, Keith was telling the truth. He's like, wow, Keith was at a moment of Grateful Dead history that here we are celebrating 50 years later. And I'm sure a 15-year-old bass player couldn't have imagined that at the time.
You know, I knew it was important, but you know, like I said, the fame was fleeting at the time, and I moved on and did lots of other things, but it's been such a fun story to tell. And it's always funny. It's also fun to tell it to clients.
Sure. Oh, I can imagine. Right. For all of these. Right. I mean, talk about a great icebreaker. And you told us that's what you do with it. So that's really a great way to get going. Well, Mark, I have to tell you, this is just all, you know, so amazing to me. You know, and as a guy from St. Louis who has deep St. Louis roots, and not just the Cardinals, although that's typically where it begins and ends for me. You know, I've always loved St. Louis's role in the Grateful Dead history. You know, I loved being able to meet Keith, and, you know, more than anything else, just to be able to talk to somebody who was there at the time and present and all of these things. And now, you know, we spill over into this, and this is just amazing to me how this Grateful Dead world all eventually comes together in a nice, neat circle. And, you know, they decide to put out a box set. People start checking their notes, and here you are.
I will say that my family is tired of this story.
Well,
they would prefer never to ever have to hear it again, because they've heard it so many times.
Well, I'll tell you, my father is an orthopedic surgeon, and, you know, he was as conservative and, sorry, Dad, boring as they come. I love him to death, but, you know, he was never going to be a guy. I tell my kids, they come and listen to all of my music. There's not a single album at your grandfather's house that I've ever listened to or would ever listen to. But in 1978, long story short, Stones came through St. Louis on their Some Girls Tour to do a surprise show at Kiel Opera House, and Wyman had fallen off the stage in Minnesota the night before and broke his finger. So the producer knew my dad, got him down there to take care of Bill Wyman's finger. While he was there, he wound up lancing a boil on Mick Jagger's butt. Rolling Stones went out and played. My dad sat on the stage all night. My cousin was in the first row watching, because I was away at summer camp in Wisconsin when all of this went down. But I tell the story as much as I can. My father doesn't want to hear the story anymore. You know, most people would say, wow, that's cool. His response was, no more rock concerts. They're loud and they're smelly and there's people smoking dope and you're not going to anymore. I'm like, how did this happen? So, you know, we tell the story. He's like, yeah, whatever. But however it works, it works. So, do you ever get back to St. Louis?
Yeah, in fact, my wife and I just did what we call the Cousins, Cemeteries, and Corn Stubble Tour. And we landed in St. Louis. I had yet to see my mother's headstone, which had been placed a couple of years ago. So we went there, and then we went out to Columbia and visited Cousins. And then we actually drove up your way. We drove through the corn stubble was Effingham and Champaign. I met with a couple of clients, and then we ended up spending 4 or 5 days in Chicago and had a great time. So yeah, we do the Midwest every once in a while.
Now, when you guys were in high school, was Jake's Leg, the Grateful Dead cover band, playing at that time?
No, I don't remember that at all. I don't think they were old enough yet to have a cover band at that point. And it was funny because Steve was doing the math. I mean, I think they were only about 5 or probably 8 years older than us. And they were still, you know, particularly that first tour through, they were still young and relatively unknown outside of the, you know, the hardcore circuit. It wasn't until after that that they, you know, that they met some measure of fame, you know, real fame.
Wow. That's just fantastic. Well, Mark, you know, even without Rob here, I could talk to you all night about this because there's all sorts of St. Louis stuff we haven't even gotten into yet. But, you know, the audience doesn't want to hear me. They want to hear you, and you've been wonderful. And sharing these stories with us and everything is, you know, really pretty incredible. And here you are, you know, on whatever level you want to call it, you know, permanently a part of Grateful Dead history.
Permanently is what it seems like.
And God bless, right? 100 years from now, some deadheads will still be talking about a story when the Grateful Dead.
I was happy that I could finally tell the story officially with you guys and the podcast and all this, so that maybe I won't have to tell it quite so many times in front of my children. I just point people to the podcast. In fact, that last article in the Jewish Light, guy calls me and I said, well, before you interview me, why don't you go listen to the podcast? Because frankly, we got most of the really good details out.
Right. Right. And I'm glad you mentioned that because in St. Louis for the Jewish community, we do have a weekly newspaper called The Jewish Light, which, you know, prior to this, as I can recall best, their most exciting article may have been, I can't even recall. It was something my mother read, my grandmother read, and I wasn't allowed to throw out it. I had to make sure they're, and yet here they are, The Jewish Light. And I've heard that the St. Louis Jewish community is trying to cash in on this as a way to, you know, kind of bolster up the idea that this was at a bar mitzvah and it's a big Jewish thing. And
I can't tell you how many people reached out to me after that article. And I never even talked to the, I texted with the author, but I never really talked to him. And the day after it dropped, I'm getting texts from my best friend, my old friend from high school, and this one and that one. It was, everybody reads The Jewish Lights.
Well, but like, okay, so over the last, you know, 30 or 40 years, when you would get together with some of your buddies, is it the kind of thing that they would talk about, or was it the kind of thing that, you know, was mostly pushed to the side by now?
It was not that important in sort of, you know, everybody's life. And again, most people who weren't there are tired of hearing the story. So, you know, it would usually just be new people who I, you know, when I was trying to impress them, or that's probably not even the right word, but, you know, give them some sense of how old I am.
Right. True that. Oh, here's one other question I wanted to ask you. You said you let Phil Lesh play your bass because obviously he was their bass player. Did he give you any tips?
Well, actually, it was really amusing because I had just started to play stand-up bass because my mother, I had played guitar for years, and in switching into the Spring Rain, I had taken up the bass. And my mother was very insistent that if I was going to play this electric thing, I had to learn the real one. So I had started taking bass lessons from the principal of the Seattle Symphony. And then it was like, okay, well, if I'm going to play a real bass, why don't I get a fretless bass? So I had a fretless bass. And I remember one of the things that he said to me was that he had actually never really played with a fretless bass. So that was a little different for him. Now, I don't know that I played it very well, but at least I think it was a new experience for him at the time.
Well, I'm sure. And of course, you know, Phil went on to revolutionize it. He plays, if it's a 5-string or a 6-string bass and all that kind of stuff. He's just, you know, but of course, he also wrote classical music and he was kind of the savant of the group, I think. So that's great. So yes, I well, you know, tell your kids not to listen to the podcast. Everybody else can, because, you know, people are going to want to hear these stories, and hopefully, you know, you'll still keep getting, you know, at least a little bit of recognition out of it. And, you know, for a life story to have, this isn't a bad one.
It's not a bad story. It's a good story. The last thing is that for years, it was actually my guitar that the guitar player was playing. And so when those strings were well used, we pulled them off and stuck them on our wall. And Steve wrote a note saying, these are dead strings. And that was one of the goofy things that Steve would do, because only he would get slicked up and go out and sing Johnny B. Goode.
That's too funny. So, you know, you put your strings up on the wall. Sure, why not? I mean, you have to memorialize it. Did they ever tell you where Garcia was that night?
No, not really. And I've always speculated, but I'll keep that to myself.
Well, there were a lot of, you know, I'm sure, pretty young girls running around in that place. So, and Jerry did have an affinity for those kind of things, so who knows? So, you know, you go home at the end of the night, you have a good story to tell your parents. That's great.
That's right. Well, actually, Steve tells the story is that he woke his parents up to tell him that he had just played with the Grateful Dead, and they just rolled over and said, that's nice. See you later. See you in the morning.
Right. Good night. Don't wake me up. Sure. Exactly. Mark, thank you so much. This has just been wonderful for you to give us the time today. We had been talking still a couple of years earlier here, 1969, a Fillmore show on the 20th of December. And now we can dive into that one a little bit. Dan, do you have that second clip from that show? Can't miss that. That's in my opinion, that is the 11, and that's one of the most famous guitar sequences that Jerry Garcia plays in all of the Grateful Dead. I love that riff, and I love that part of the jam in the middle of the tune. It's great. It's high energy. It served as a wonderful bridge from St. Stephen into Lovelight, and it's just a marvelous. And that was a great show, as they all are from that period of time. December 20th, 1969, from the Fillmore. And as always, one that I would encourage everyone to go out and pick up. The set list in it just goes on and on and on, and that's what makes it so special for everybody, I think. But definitely when you have Masons to open, you have a Hot 11 in the middle, into a Lovelight. It's just classic Grateful Dead from that moment in time, and you really do hear the energy of the band. You know, as Mark was saying, you know, even in 1971, they're young guys. In 69, they were even younger. And there's just a lot of great enthusiasm. It really sounds very crisp and clear for a recording that is that old. And certainly something that, again, I would recommend that people listen to. You know, they love the Fillmore very much, the Grateful Dead. And whenever they were there, they were always at the top of their game. And that concert from 12-20-69 is no exception. So it's certainly something that that people should consider going out and having a chance to listen to. Otherwise, folks, that's it. You know, it's kind of hard to come up with Grateful Dead news that we have that's a whole lot better and more interesting than what Mark Slosberg was able to share with us today. And on the marijuana front, what I would tell everyone is go read the article about Curaleaf's recent announcement of a $425 million private placement of 8% senior secured notes that are due in 2026. And go ask your father or your grandfather if they ever imagined that a marijuana company would have news like that, you know, in the national media. And, of course, this is just another day in the marijuana industry, another huge deal. It's becoming a monster. People still talk, you know, in a sense as though, well, what if it doesn't really survive? It's not going anywhere. The cat is out of the bag here, and we're on our way. Mark, if you're still there, and if I could just ask you another quick question really quickly, without incriminating yourself by any means, would spring rain pregame?
Well, you know, speaking from a state that where it's incredibly legal, one of the first two, you know, we've been having a great old time. We didn't really spring rain. No, subsequent bands. Absolutely.
Of course. See, now your kids will have a reason to listen. Blackmail material. That.
Oh, my kids, we've had long, long conversations. So it's no secret.
No, as have I. I figure that's the only way to do it. You just got to let them know the way of the world. I was wondering, and any reason to believe that the Dead had been imbibing on anything other than the bar before they showed up? Were their eyes kind of glazed and spinning? Or?
You know, we were so focused. I mean, you know, for us, it was a gig. We were being paid, and when all of the hubbub died down, we still had to load up. You know, and like the old Jackson Brown song, we were our own roadies. We had to load up the truck and get it back. So. You know, it's hard to know. Again, that was always my speculation. You know, they were drinking whatever was happening elsewhere we didn't know about. They were very focused, and Steve talked about this. Bob Weir apparently spent a lot of time with Steve talking about not imbibing and not getting, you know, not getting involved in particularly the hard drugs. Steve remembered particularly that I think he had said he'd been to high school with Janis Joplin, and had lived through many of these things. So while I'm sure there was a lot of stuff, you know, we were all very focused that the addictive stuff was something to stay away from. And that was a part of the conversation that evening. So
wow, that's kind of cool to know, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that wasn't a conversation I had. That was one that Steve had. But
sure.
You know, I think that was all part of it. I think they realized once the gravity of what was happening, they turned to be much more family oriented, if you will. And I think they made sure the evening didn't end up, as somebody said, I think it was Jesse Jarno or somebody like that said, yeah, you know, all the kids got home. Nobody was missing. Everybody had a good time. You know, it ended up being a little more PG rated than you would have expected at a show like that. So,
sure.
But these were 13-year-olds. So, you know, you do have to be careful. So,
well, I'll throw out a name that you may or may not recognize from St. Louis days, Harold Yalom.
Oh, sure.
Harold was one of the, he, you know, did the bar mitzvah parties, right? And he would.
Yeah, he was the he was our competition. He was the, if they didn't have a band, if they didn't have a band, it was Harold Yalom's gig.
And what I used to get a kick out of with him was, in order to get the guys and the girls to dance, he'd have all sorts of games and he'd hand out albums. And one night we were at a party and he said, "Oh, here, come out to my car. I've got," and he opened up his trunk and he had more albums in there than I had ever seen. And he said, "What do you guys like? Do you like the Grateful Dead?" And I remember this. He showed me Blues for Allah. And at the time, I had no idea what it was. And I probably wound up walking out of there, you know, with a Head East album or something. But, you know, even he, this guy, Harold Yalom, who I, you know, just always assumed was this, you know, real, you know, traditional kind of guy, even he was handing it out back then. So it was amazing. It was, that's too funny. Okay, well, we've gone through a few things, but if you have any other questions for Mark, lay them out there, baby.
I do have a tongue-in-cheek question to ask you, which is that, you know, you said you were playing some Elton John back then, and I think Madman Across the Water came out right around that time in 71. So my question is, did you play the song Holiday Inn at the Hilton?
We did not, but it was funny because Elton John was the second concert I had ever seen, the first one being Jimi Hendrix when we were 12 years old.
Wow. Where'd you see Jimi Hendrix in St. Louis?
At the Kiel.
Oh, my.
And wow. 1968, I have the poster over our, framed over our toilet in our powder room. So, you know, that Bruce and I and one other friend from middle school, we called it junior high back then. I don't even know why my parents allowed it to happen, but we did. And then we moved on to Elton John, and then we started playing the music. So we were really more in the Your Song area. You know, the first two albums, Tumbleweed Connection and the original Your Song album. I can't remember. I think that was
two. Yep. Take Me to the Pilot.
Yes. I think we did that one, actually.
That's because I think the big songs that came off of Madman Across the Water were Tiny Dancer and Levon, and that was 71.
Yeah, that was actually, so that was after us. I mean, we weren't playing that music. We were playing it just earlier than that.
Oh, come on, man. Tiny Dancer is the perfect bar mitzvah song.
Well, the perfect bar mitzvah song was Money from Pink Floyd, but that was a later band.
That's actually a great choice. as the relatives are walking up handing envelopes.
That's exactly right, you know. But what was great about that song is it was in 9/8. I think it was 9/8 or 7/8. I can't remember, but it was very interesting to watch the kids trying to dance to that.
What a great bass line.
Right. It's true. Some of that music, you know, you may not know if you haven't heard it before.
That's right.
Wow. So you were exposing people to good stuff.
Hey, we were playing Chick Corea and Mahavishnu Orchestra in the later bands. So.
Oh, wow. Even better. Yeah. Okay.
It was even more fun to watch them trying to dance to Inner Mountain Flame. That was my favorite.
You know, kids will dance to anything, especially if they can slow dance.
Yeah, but getting to dance in 9/8 time, that is not easy. That's the kid that's awkward already, tripping over himself.
Or all of a sudden looking like he knows what he's doing.
Right, yeah. Suddenly he's a genius. Goes on to be a great modern dancer DJ after that. That's really funny. Well, all I can say is I am delighted to know that the rumor or the myth or, you know, whatever you want to call it is true. And I feel the same way talking to you, Mark, as I did the first time I spoke to the Waldos about the origin of 420, where, you know, all the stories I'd heard, you know, about it, it all sort of came together. I'm like, wow, this really is true, and it really is you guys, and this really happened. And there's certain, like, parts of, like, sort of the Americana lore of, you know, the Grateful Dead mythology that, when they're confirmed, just kind of just makes you feel really, really happy to know that they're really true.
Well, and it's partially fun because it was essentially an underground story for 50 years.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, I would tell the story, and I'm sure Steve told the story. He talks about his family's tired of it. But it wasn't ever public or anything, and it took a 50-year anniversary for somebody to actually dig around and say, so are any of these people still around? And, you know, we haven't died yet, although sometimes I wonder.
And you're not too much younger than some of us. If you're playing in a band at a bar mitzvah, you probably had to be, you know, as you said, what, 16, 17?
We were all 15. Only Steve was 16. He drove a yellow Pinto station wagon, you know, the one that was made famous by the by Nader. That was what we hauled our equipment around in.
Which meant that if that was the case and you said you never had to do another thing in high school, you had four very easy years of high school, man.
Well, okay, so I was a sophomore, So because the Ladue High School started, it was in 10th grade. But yes, I had a wonderful, my years, and people say they would never go back and revisit high school. I had a great time.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, high school's fun, especially when you're meeting the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, or sneaking out of your house to go see the Grateful Dead, you know, as a kid. Or, by the way, sneaking out of the house to go see the New Riders, who used to play right down the street from me in White Plains, New York. And I couldn't get into the bar, but I could stand outside, and they had the stage right against the window of the bar, and we'd just stand out there and kind of half-dance in the parking lot where people would drive by going, what's wrong with those kids? But it was fun.
Well, it was funny because I had never heard of them before that night. And then after that, like I said, you know, when I met my wife and discovered she was a New Riders fan rather than a Grateful Dead fan, I thought that was, you know, there's a Jewish word, beshert. That's what it was. It was fate.
That is. Well, you know, look, when the stars align, they align. And with the Grateful Dead, that seems to happen more often than not. Okay. Wow. Well, this has just been fantastic. Thank you so much, Mark, for joining us. Happy holidays to you and your family. And wow, you know, I guess it's something I can check off my bucket list now that, you know, I talked to one of the guys who was in the high school band at the Richie Gerber Bar Mitzvah. That's a big step for me.
I'm telling you, Mark, this has been a quest of Larry's, an absolute quest where he's like, I'm going to track this guy down. And this is before we started hearing all the hype, you know, before, like, you know, it even came out. You know, Larry was ahead of the game on this one. I got to give him a lot of credit going, I've heard this story. I think it's true. I know a person that swears it is, and I'm going to track this one down, and we're going to get him. And kudos to you, Larry, for sleuthing and getting this interview to happen. So, you know, and thank you, Mark, for making it happen.
Yes, and thank you to Keith Zerman, who's not with us today, but will join us on another episode, who was the gentleman who shared the story with me and helped me make the connection with Mark. So also thank you to Keith, who wasn't able to join us today, but thank you, sir. Okay, guys. Well, don't forget, for our listeners, next week we will have Jim Marty back for his final episode as one of our co-hosts before he goes off into wonderful retirement, leaving controls to just Rob and to me, and hoping we don't crash it right out of the box. But we feel good and confident about that, and we're going to be ready to roll. But please tune in next week so we can all say our goodbyes to Jim, one of the founders of this podcast and one of the big players early on in the cannabis industry, especially on the accounting side. Also, since this is our last show before the Christmas holiday, for those of you who celebrate Christmas, have a very happy Christmas, a happy, healthy Christmas, a Merry New Year, and all that kind of stuff. And we will be back next week. But as we leave today in the spirit of Christmas, we're actually going to switch back over to one of these Fox Theater shows that brought the Grateful Dead to St. Louis in 1971. And we've talked a lot about their covers of Chuck Berry tunes. Here's another one that's very good for the season, Run Rudolph Run. So to all of our listeners out there, thank you for listening today. Thank you again to Mark Schlossberg. Everyone have a great holiday and enjoy your cannabis responsibly.
Out of all the reindeer, you know you're the mastermind. Run, run, Rudolph, ran up not too far behind. Run, run, Rudolph, Santa's got the baby to town. Tell him he can hurry, tell him he can take the freeway down. And away went Rudolph, whistling like a merry-go-round. Said Santa to a